So the Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Foundation is 30 years old. In 2007, we decided the board decided, actually, it was just prior to my coming on as executive director, that they wanted to use their foundation to begin an initiative and have substantial impact on childhood obesity prevention for kids ages 6 to 12. It was a very different landscape then, as many of you know. The IMS had issued its report. The Center for Science and the Public Interest had issued F as in Fat. Chris Economos' work in Somerville, she's a Tufts professor, had shown that if you could change many of the determinants of food and physical activity in a community, you could stop the escalation of obesity in kids in the younger years. So there was, and Robert Wood Johnson had just announced its major initiative. So there were a number of things going on at the time, but as a foundation that had never really looked at this issue before, we knew we had a lot of homework to do, and we knew that it was important for us to get the lay of the land and really take a look at what the situation of the epidemic was in our state. And so we hired Chris Economos from Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition and her team to go around the region and take a look at what the status of the epidemic was, what the situation was, and where were there promising practices that were evidence-based that might actually begin to be effective and make a difference. Do the next. So those of you who know New England, this is our home. This is where we are doing our work. And we are a very interesting part of the country, as many of you know. We don't have a lot of natural resources. Our economy is absolutely dependent on brain power. We are a place where technology and manufacturing and academics and healthcare has been the driving force of our economy. And so we need the best brains that we can raise up and the best brains we can get. And what we found, as you all know, and many of you are feeling it in your parts of the world, that about one-third of our kids were overweight or obese. And the consequences of that going forward for their health and for their academic success was pretty dire. And so we looked at how we might change that trajectory by looking at the places where kids work and play. I should say learn and play. I mean, they're not working yet. So the cost of this was, you can go to the next slide. So, no, back up to Fenway Park. Okay, so this is Fenway Park. Every talk in Boston for the next week is going to have a shot at Fenway Park. They may as well get used to it. We looked at the statistics, and it was kind of hard to wrap your brain around them, but we figured on the numbers, and we figured that the number of obese and overweight kids in our three states would fill Fenway Park nearly 13 times. It's a pretty big place, and that the cost for that would be from $35 to $127 million. Numbers kind of don't really resonate, I think. I think it's more interesting when you go to places like schools and playgrounds and churches and after-school programs, and you actually look at what the kids look like there. And I will say, in 2007, you know, you would go into almost any elementary school, public elementary school in the region, and you would see overweight kids sitting. Probably lots of birthday parties with cupcakes, not much recess, not much physical education, not much of anything going on in after-school programs besides sitting in front of screens, eating chips, drinking soda. I mean, it was a pretty dire situation. And I think that because we were able to tap into some very impressive programs around the region, that we were sort of able to get our hands around what this foundation could do. We're not a big foundation. We had about $1 million a year to work with in three states. So we knew three things. One, we knew we could only do things that were evidence-based. I mean, we couldn't fool around with one-offs and road races and all the other things that people think are going to make a difference. We had to really do something that would change the environment permanently. We also knew that we needed partners. There was no way we could do this alone. $1 million in 3 states without other people being part of this, which frankly was an interesting digression for a corporate foundation. We're a not-for-profit health plan, but we're still a business. And most businesses really want to do their own thing, put their name on it, get their marketing people out there. And we'd seen a number of other health plans sort of follow this route, and we decided that that wasn't the way we were going to have substantial impact. And finally, we knew that we really had to prove in each state that we could work with the people who were there. We had to let the states take the leadership on what they decided would be the intervention that made the most sense for them. That we weren't going to come in, tell them what to do, and say, you have to run our program and you have to run it our way. Although Cheryl and Beth will probably tell you sometimes it feels that way, but we really try not to do that. And so those were the three things that we knew we needed to do. Do you want to go to the next slide? So my really good friend Mark Fenton, and I know many of you who knows Mark Fenton, seen him speak, good, that's great, because he has this phrase called the free-range kids. It's one of my favorite phrases. And so this is our inspiration. These are our free-range kids. Notice they're outside. There are no adults in that picture. They are actually doing something physical. They're pulling a rope. And the sun's on their faces, and you can almost feel the fresh air in their hair. And for many of us, that's how we grew up. And I think when we really try and bring this message home to people about what we're trying to do, it is really about recreating that time when kids would bang out of the door after school or on the weekends, they would jump on their bike, they would head off, and they would frankly not come back, as my mother would say, until the streetlights came back on. And this is essentially what we try and hold out in terms of overall, at the end of the day, this is really the impact we're trying to have. Do you want to go to the next slide? So we printed a publication called Tipping the Scales in Favor of Our Children. Again, it was looking at the percentage of overweight and obese kids. We sort of, through that process, found some really vital opportunities that were sort of taking place in each of the three states. And what was interesting to us was, in a way, how different they were. Which one comes up first now? So Mass in Motion, which is a public-private partnership, was actually sparked by the State Department of Health. You know that we had a new governor in 2006 and a new commissioner of health, and he went on a listening tour. In fact, we had gone to see him in early 2007 and said, you know, John, you don't know us, we really don't know you, but we really think there's something with this obesity prevention stuff, and we all really want to help you get something started. He said, well, you know, maybe that's true. I'm going to go around the state. I'm going to listen. He came back and said, you know what? That was at the top of people's list. You know, kids, the parents want their kids to be healthy. They don't see it happening. So it was really interesting that he called together a group of foundations and health plans together to put money into, in a sense, recreate Shape Up Somerville throughout the state. And Cheryl's going to talk to you and give you sort of the in-depth aspects of that. Do you want to go to the next one? So Catch Kids Club, which is part of the HEAL, Healthy Eating Active Living Initiative in New Hampshire, came out of philanthropy in New Hampshire. A whole group of foundations who were health foundations and community foundations and other foundations that support lots of other things got together and said, we've got to do something about New Hampshire. You know, we look around, we're seeing obese kids. You know, what can we do as philanthropies together to sort of make a difference for kids? And they put together a program, and we came in and said, and again, it was community-based. It was basically, we're going to find HEAL communities in New Hampshire, we're going to invest in them, and we're going to try and get them to change environments in their communities. And we offered to support them in the kids portion with coordinated approach to child health. Let's Go in Maine was a different take on this, and we're hoping that Dr. Tori Rogers will be here by 9:15 to talk to you about it. She's kind of stuck in traffic on 95. That's a very New England thing as well. It was businesses in Portland, Maine who came together and said, you know what, we've got a problem with our employees. We've got a problem with our employees and their families. They went to the United Way and they said, United Way, you know about sort of how to do programs. We don't. We're businesses. But we want to invest in a solution for Maine. And very smart, the United Way turned to the Barbara Bush Children's Hospital in Maine and found Tori Rogers as incredibly amazing pediatrician who had been working on just this kind of thing. And again, it was a strategy to change environments in communities. So there's Let's Go in schools, in healthcare, in workplace, and it's since 2007 when we called them and said, we want to be part of this, they've gone statewide. So we continue to do three things as part of this initiative. One was the funding part, obviously. We wanted to put things on the ground with our partners that looked like something different, that would be effective and evidence-based, but would tell people and show people what change really looks like on the ground. The second thing we said we would do is we would provide information to inform the debate. So we followed this with a Balancing Act, a program for families, information for families. We followed it up with the school nutrition publication, which highlighted how a number of really entrepreneurial school food service directors around the region in places that don't have a lot of money and have a high rate of free and reduced lunch kids are making healthy food possible in their schools. And finally, the last thing we said we would do is we would invest in public policy initiatives that could, at the state level, if there was an opportunity, sort of change the way things were done across the board. I mean, we're all interested in policy change. I think we're all thinking about the gridlock at the national government level. We don't all live in states which have activist governors on this. And so we thought that that would be something we would try. We were very successful in Maine getting a soda tax, which was then overturned. The Act Fresh campaign in Massachusetts really changed the face of school nutrition in the state. And in New Hampshire, we paid for the staff for a Senate commission that produced a report that has since had some very positive changes in school nutrition and other areas in Maine. We continue to invest in policy, but we're seeing that with all of the noise, not using that in a bad way, but all of the attention being paid to the enactment of the Affordable Care Act, it's really hard to get people's attention on anything else, particularly prevention for kids. And so we're sort of, I think, in a holding pattern now in terms of waiting to see where we can get engaged in public policy again. So we've learned a lot, and we've learned a lot of what we don't know. We've learned that it's really hard to measure what you're doing. We sort of set out to say we're going to change environment. You can walk into places now, they look different, they feel different, there's different things there, the kids are behaving differently, but it's really hard to sort of capture that in some meaningful statistical way that you can go and knock some policymaker over the head with it. That's really hard. The other thing we've learned, though, that this is really possible to do, and it's not that expensive. You can do some really expensive things, but we have seen change take place in places that we wouldn't have imagined it, and very sustainable change, particularly in food and physical activity in schools and after-school programs, which is where we've done most of our work. The next thing we've learned is that how important it is to stay in this. We've been in it for 7 years now. We are probably going to a decade and maybe beyond, sort of change some of what we've been funding, but it's still around environmental change. You can't do this, you know, just sort of as a flash in the pan. You really have to sort of stick with it. You have to dive into something and stay there. You have to be hands-on. I mean, we don't sit in our offices and write checks. As anybody here who has received a grant from us or has worked with us knows, you know, we are there and on the phone and going to places and looking at things and constantly sort of bringing people together. Every year we have a, I won't use the term conference, it's probably too formal, but we bring people from across the region together to actually talk about this and exchange information in a very informal way. And finally, I think the thing that we've learned that's probably the most important of all and it's really the lesson you learn about everything, is how important leadership is. I mean, leadership, we have seen Trump's strategy every single time, and particularly engaged political leadership. In Math in Motion, as Cheryl will tell you, we have had, when we developed the request for proposals from this pool of money that we put together and we put them out the door, one of the things that the whole group demanded was that not only the highest elected political official in the community sign off on it, but they have to promise to convene their staff and look at their budget and figure out ways that they can stay in this and use existing resources to make environments for people healthier. And at every level. So there's a junior high school in Maine. I'll make this very brief. A junior high school in Maine where we had made a Let's Go grant of $1,500 so the school could do something beyond simply be trained and understand how they were supposed to do things differently. It was to give them some money to actually do something. The junior high school in a fairly low-income working class neighborhood in, I think, Greater Portland. And there was a greenhouse in the school that the science department had control of, and it was just sitting there. We had, you know, invested in Let's Go, and Let's Go has people go into the school and do training, very basic training around food and physical activity. The teachers get involved, you know, they take out the crap snacks, and I mean, they really are working, and so instead of food as a reward, they actually set up an activity room within the school, and the kids who, you know, are getting rewards get to go there and jump around and sit on balls and, you know, kind of go crazy, and it's really fun to watch. But there was a janitor and a school food, a cafeteria mom, and a married couple. I think maybe they had an eighth grade education. And they went to the head of the science department on their own and said, you know what? That greenhouse is empty. And we know we need to get kids fresh fruits and vegetables for lunch and for snacks. How about we, this couple, take over the greenhouse? We're going to grow lettuce and, you know, hydroponic tomatoes. And the science guy said, sure, 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 never thinking anything would happen. Well, they took some of the money that we gave them, and they, on their own time, retrofitted the greenhouse, and they planted stuff, and it has just been an amazing, and in their own time, not during the school day, weekend, this night, they're actually growing fresh food for these kids. And so that's been the thing I think we've learned that has been the most important and most inspiring to us, that everybody has a role to play. Some of them don't know what their role is yet, and that's sort of our job, to get to them and help them do that. But everybody can do something. I mean, that's really, I think, what we've learned. If one person in the community steps up, the effect has been, across the board, it's been life-changing. So I'm going to turn it over to Cheryl, and she's going to tell you all about Math in Motion. And if you go to our website, we have publications here. If you go to our website or give us a call, we will be happy to answer. We're going to have plenty of time to talk to you. If you have any questions offline, we're happy to answer.
Great. You can put the first one on. Thank you, Karen. That was a great overview of your efforts, and a special thanks to Harvard Pilgrim Health Foundation for your leadership in this area. So, as Karen mentioned, Math in Motion Kids really came out of the State Department of Public Health, then Commissioner Auerbach, coming on and recognizing overweight and obesity as an epidemic here in Massachusetts. Third of our children, two-thirds of adults, overweight and obese, and seeing a doubling in many of our chronic diseases. Diabetes rates were going up, and really came together to have a call for action. So the first thing that we did was come forth and really do the research and say what the burden of overweight and obesity was and what the associated chronic diseases were. And we were beginning to see our school children in elementary school coming to school with chronic diseases, things we should only be seeing in adults. And so with that, we came together and brought about 50 people across the state together who were looking at different aspects of overweight and obesity and said, what are we going to do about this? And at the same time, Dr. Frieden was a new director at the CDC and was really encouraging public health departments to stop thinking about individual clinical counseling or clinical education one by one. This was too large of a population that we needed to reach. And so the public health pyramid that I'm sure all of you have seen again and again really became our priority at the department, how to really think about policy systems and the built environment so that we could change the conditions where people lived. And so that was really the beginning of Mass in Motion, a healthy eating and active living campaign. And with that, this was really a multifaceted. We worked with the governor's office to put together some executive orders, and Executive Order 509 was about all the food we procured in the state of Massachusetts. We have a lot of residential facilities where people live, and they weren't eating particularly healthy foods. And so anyone that was procuring food for the Commonwealth had to have nutrition standards. We implemented a BMI regulations. All children in grades 1, 4, 7, and 10 had their BMI screened and aggregated and reported to the Department of Public Health so we could follow what the trend of obesity and overweight was. We implemented some of the strongest in the nation school nutrition standards, where we removed sodas and sugary beverages from our vending machines and from our competitive foods in the cafeteria. We had public information campaigns to start to get people thinking about overweight and obesity and what was their diet and their physical activity levels. And one of the cornerstones that I'll talk more about is our municipal wellness grants that Karen referenced. And also a worksite initiative where we worked with about 100 businesses to help them understand how they could increase the health of their workforce, which would increase productivity and presenteeism. And we also have a website that provides inexpensive ways that one could understand how to improve their families, healthy eating and active living behaviors and communities and schools. And that provided ways of knowing where in the state they could engage in some of these activities. And through this, we were fortunate to get two community transformation grants that allowed us to really expand what we were doing. We started out with 11 legacy communities and eventually were able to go to 52 communities, reaching about 33% of our population. Next. So this, again, is our cornerstone, what we call our Municipal Wellness and Leadership Grant. It was a public-private partnership, and this could not have been done without the key funders. This idea we came to in 2008 happened just before the economic recession, where the Department of Public Health experienced up to 40% budget reductions in many of our programs. And so the idea of starting a new initiative that we knew would take significant resources was impossible. But Harvard Pilgrim Health Foundation, I believe, was our first funder, private funder, to come forward and really help to support this. That allowed us to go to five other organizations and say, we really need your help to partnership with us on this. And so we had five private funders, and the Department of Public Health was able to contribute as well. And what we did was use recommended evidence-based strategies for community change. We used the CDC's change tool to have communities come together as multi-sector coalitions and assess their community. What were the barriers for healthy eating and active living? And one of the things we learned is that change tool is quite lengthy, and that if we were to do it again, we would have focused more on the healthy eating and active living sections instead of making them go through every single section of that change tool. But each year they had to pick a healthy eating or active living strategy that they were going to work on making a policy system or built environment change. We provided technical assistance with them, and we had action institutes where we brought people like Mark Fenton who could talk to communities about how you could make change at a community level. Again, the importance of multi-sector planning can't be emphasized enough. What we found in some communities, the health department has the least influence in a community, which is sad to say about health, but that economic development, community development, planning departments, even sometimes the Public Works Department. They had the budgets for building sidewalks, and if they didn't have enough money, they pushed those sidewalk projects off year to year. But by coming together as a multi-sector coalitions, we were able to learn that community development could bring a little money to the table, health department could. So with three departments coming to the table within the first 6 months of Mass in Motion, we saw communities building sidewalks. That was a big opportunity and what we considered early success for building the environment that would encourage change. Non-traditional stakeholders, we really made sure that these coalitions represented the community so that we were ensuring that there was a health equity in the work that we were encouraging. And again, I think the key was this highest elected official having to be on the coalition and really demonstrate the leadership, because we know if we can't get the message to the top, we can have the best ideas in the world, but we don't change the policies. And from this came Mass in Motion Kids. And Mass in Motion Kids was a obesity research demonstration grant from the CDC. We were one of three grants in the nation to really take a more in-depth approach to looking at the obesity efforts around childhood obesity. Next. And this is just a map to let you see how we've really been able to get to 52 communities, and the different colors really represents the different funding, purple being our 11 legacy communities, the orange and green, the expansion we were able to do through community transformation grants, the only state to get two community transformation grants in the nation, which in this allowed us to start to link our community level work to clinical care. And so in those, many of the communities were doing community clinical linkages around population health management. And one of the great successes I see from this is we were able to get a hospital system to come forth and give us funding to expand it. We hope other hospitals will see this as an opportunity in healthcare reform. Next. And last is just really looking at the in-depth approach we had with Mass in Motion Kids, and really was looking at all the domains of a kid's life, going into their families, working with their families, in their clinical settings through community health centers, and then in schools, early education and care, and a curriculum in our elementary schools. This was targeted at ages 2 to 12. And we were really trying to change five behaviors: decreasing consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages, increasing physical activity, increasing consumption of fruits and vegetables, decreasing screen time. On average, our middle-aged children are having about 7.5 hours of screen time. Let's get them physically active. And then improving sleep. There's some evidence that improved sleep also helps with obesity efforts. So we had interventions in each of the domains in a child's life and at the community level. And what I'm proud to say is I think between these communities and the focused attempts in our other legacy communities, we're seeing a change in the trend in obesity. And across Massachusetts this year with our BMI screening, we have a 3.7 reduction in the rates of obesity in childhood. So we're thrilled and thank you, thankful for the opportunity we had to begin this effort, and glad to be here today. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. One of the things that you may have seen or heard recently, that the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation came up with a report that obesity is actually stalled and or slightly decreasing in some parts of the country. One of those places is Eastern Massachusetts, and that's clearly because of the leadership of Cheryl and her team and the public-private partnership that they've put together. Several of the communities that they talk about in that report are Mass in Motion communities, some of the first. And so, thanks. That was really, really helpful. So, Beth's going to talk to you now about our neighbor to the north, New Hampshire. She's going to tell you a little bit about HEAL, but also specifically about the Coordinated Approach to Child Health, which is the program that we have been funding for about 6 years.
My apologies, my allergies are catching up with me here, but hopefully we'll have more frost soon, so I don't have to worry about it so much. I know. I'm telling you, it gets rid of the bugs, it gets rid of the allergies, it's all good. So let me see. So regarding Catch Kids Club, so I'm going to talk to you about the Catch Kids Club project. And when I say Catch Kids Club, it's the after-school portion of the coordinated approach to child health program that Karen had referred to. So coordinated approach to child health, the acronym is CATCH. So Catch Kids Club is the after-school portion. Our main purpose with the Catch Kids Club project is to provide environments to make the healthy choice the easy choice for kids in after-school programs. And really what it is to, we work with after-school programs to take a look at their environments, see what changes could be made so that healthy eating is the norm and physical activity is just what you do. And we do that in a multitude of ways. But first what I want to do is to give you a little bit of history because it didn't just start out that way. And in 2002 to 2006, we were working with communities to improve health. Well, we still do. But since 2002, we have been doing so. But from 2002 to 2006, we worked in the Community Prevention and Treatment Initiative. And that's what CPTI up there means, Community Prevention and Treatment Initiative. Bridging clinical and community efforts to improve prevention and treatment of cardiovascular disease. So we were focused mainly on adults. But what we heard from our communities, and you'll see this threaded throughout our history here, is we always tried to listen to our communities and what they saw as a need and what they saw as a solution. It was mostly adult folks, as I said, but they wanted to work with kids, and they said, you know, we're seeing more and more overweight kids in our communities, and we really feel like all this healthy eating and physical activity strategies that we're doing for adults, we really need to do with kids. And so we had an opportunity with our diabetes prevention grant, that's the diabetes PAN grant there in 2004, to work with a couple of those CPTI communities and work on improving healthy eating and physical activity in kids. And so we found the Catch Kids Club program. We did a lot of research, and we found this evidence-based program that was developed by the University of Texas, also researched by the University of Texas. And it was found to be successful at increasing healthy eating and physical activity time in children. So we worked with two sites, one in Keene and one in Laconia, after-school sites, to implement Catch Kids Club. But it didn't stop there, because as we continued to work with communities, we said, you know, they're seeing a lot of overweight kids. They're asking for us to work with kids. And so we did a survey in 2006. You'll see that in the red box there. It was a statewide survey of pediatric patients across New Hampshire, and we did see a 33% rate of overweight or obese children aged 6 to 12. So we said, all right, next CPTI project is going to be focused on childhood obesity. And so during that project, we had talked with Karen and Mike extensively, and they said, what are you doing in your communities, and how can we help? And we said, you know, Catch Kids Club, we're starting to make inroads on that in Keene and Laconia, and we really feel like this would be a great program to work in the after-school setting. And the other thing that I want to mention is that while we were working with communities, the after-school sites kept saying, hey, you know, don't just work with schools, don't just work with recreation programs, work with us, because we feel that we could be leaders in this, we can help make change in the health of the kids that we serve. And so, funding began with Catch Kids Club by Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Foundation around 2007, and they committed to 5 years of funding. That was fantastic. So we increased the number of sites. So in Keene, Laconia, we had two sites. We increased it to 18 sites in the CPTI Childhood Obesity Project with help from Harvard Pilgrim. And then next, and this gives you a little bit of kind of the transformation, the evolution of Catch Kids Club, then Karen and Mike came to us, and several other people came to us and said, you know, let's make this statewide. So we partnered with New Hampshire Recreation and Parks Association, Plus Time New Hampshire, who was in charge of training after-school programs to improve quality. We partnered with the YMCA in New Hampshire, as well as the New Hampshire Boys and Girls Club group. And we came up with a plan to make this more of a project, the Catch Kids Club project, to spread Catch Kids Club to all over New Hampshire to various after-school programs. So we weren't just focused on simply the communities we are working with to improve health, but we decided to work more as a sector approach with after-school programs. And we brought it statewide. Can you please? So as you looked, when we look through that history of the dates, one of the things that you don't see is how this program has evolved. You saw kind of the timeline of where we went and how many sites that we were attacking. But what you didn't see is the evolution of the program. And one of the things that Sarah Weddington said, how many people went to the general session yesterday? Okay. Well, one of the things that Sarah Weddington said, she talked about skiing and how, you know, she went skiing for the first time, and she was a Texan, so Texans aren't known for their skiing skills, that she fell down a lot. And she told her instructor, she said, you know, I kept falling. And he said, good, because if you don't fall, she didn't fall, did she? She did not fall. And he said, well, then you're not trying hard enough. The way to improve is to fall. And so one of the things is we skinned our knees a lot with Catch Kids Club, and we fell more than a couple of times. But the thing is that what I can say to you is that it didn't hurt, because we said to ourselves, there is a way we can improve this approach. There is a way we can make this more successful, more effective, and really more sustainable. And how did we know that? It was from talking with the after-school programs themselves. They had all the knowledge, they had all the ideas, and I have to lend it to them. They were the leaders in all of this. And you can go to the next slide. So this gives you just a picture of what our approach is, because you're probably saying, you know, well, what exactly did you do? You're talking about the history, and you're talking about skinning your knees. How did it happen? So you can see the years, the evolution with the years, but these are all of the components of the Catch Kids Club project as it exists right now. So I'm going to talk about the different components, but you'll see that through the years, we added each of these components. So phase one, it was Catch Kids Club, the curriculum and equipment. So Catch Kids Club, as I said, it's an evidence-based program out of the University of Texas, and it has been shown to increase physical activity and healthy eating in kids who participate in the program. So it's mainly just, not just, but it's mainly a program, and a very effective one at that. So that's how we started. And the unique thing about Catch Kids Club is it's a program that has over 350 games inside a little box that each of the sites received, and it comes with equipment as well, so about $1,500 worth of equipment, so you can implement the games. But what's unique about it is that they're non-elimination games. It maximizes physical activity time and minimizes time kids spend being sedentary. So what does that mean? Well, for instance, in a game of tag, what will happen is if the kids are all playing tag, and then, you know, in the typical game of tag, you get tagged out, and then you sit on the sidelines, you kind of wait and wait for, you know, the game to start over again. The kids don't stay out. They do maybe 5 jumping jacks, and they go right back in. So it maximizes that time kids are being active. No one's ever being sedentary when they're playing a Catch Kids Club game. Absolutely not. So it's non-elimination. Also, if you think about a typical game of kickball, not that we don't all love kickball, but in a game of kickball, who's being active? The person running around the bases or the person chasing the ball? Well, what Catch Kids Club does is it modifies games, traditional games like kickball, so that all kids are moving all the time. So it's a very unique, they're very unique activities. They're all about moving. They're not about being sedentary. So it's very rare that you walk into a Catch Kids Club activity and see someone just standing there. And so it makes it more fun for the kids, and they get to improve their skills as well. And the interesting thing, and I'm going to take this from Karen, she talked about free-range kids. One of the things that Catch Kids Club does, these games, is that they're improving the kids' skills, so they're less likely to want to sit out. They feel more confident about their skills, so they're more likely to engage in physical activity, and they get more creative with thinking of games. And so when they're outside, away from the after-school program, outside of school, they're more likely to come together and just make up some games or play a Catch Kids Club game. So next, what we did, another component of the Catch Kids Club project is training. We did not do that when we first started Catch Kids Club. They didn't have training for staff. But then all of a sudden in 2007 to 2008, when we were doing the CPTI project for childhood obesity, they started doing staff training. So we had folks from Flag House, who now houses the program, come up and train staff in how to lead physical activity, how to lead Catch Kids Club programs, which was very important because that increases staff comfort level and increases staff confidence in leading physical activity programs. One of the big issues that we saw was that staff didn't necessarily feel comfortable leading physical activity. So sometimes they did Catch Kids Club, but sometimes they didn't, depending on what the game was. But here, they were able to increase their confidence and their skill level. And next component is staff support. So this happened probably around 2009 when we started bringing it statewide. We offered a lot of technical assistance to all of our Catch Kids Club sites. And we went out to each of the sites and we observed them leading physical activity. We observed them leading physical activity games. We observed their vending machines. We observed snack time. So we were able to provide them with feedback, very valuable feedback, of how to be more effective, more efficient at implementing Catch Kids Club at their site. What we also did is we were able to talk with the program staff and with the program directors, and they were able to talk with us so we could get feedback from them, what's working for them and what is not. And that was very, very important for quality improvement. We also developed a peer network, and we developed a Facebook page so that peers could talk one-on-one with each other or among the whole group. We also implemented a Catch Kids Club newsletter, which was in the form of an e-blast, to provide them with more ideas and some education. The last part, and this is probably the most important part, and this was, you know, we skinned our knees in the beginning, but now we've been doing it for probably now 4 years. It's almost 2014. And that's the environment and policy assessment. So you have this great program where you have the curriculum, the equipment, and the staff training, and you have observations, and some are providing technical assistance. But the one thing that we weren't doing was really looking at the environment that they were providing. What did that environment look like? What were the vending machines? What was in the policies that they had for the after-school program? What was in the staff training for the new staff that were coming on? Because what we did see is there was a lot of staff turnover. There was a lot of program director turnover. So sometimes Catch Kids Club kind of went on the back burner or got put into a closet. So we wanted to make it part of their philosophy, part of their goals, part of their mission. And so we started conducting environment and policy assessments with them, where we assessed their policies, we assessed their environment, and we identified opportunities. And then we worked with the programs and the organizations to really think of strategies they could do to provide a more supportive environment for the kids. And a lot of times it ended up changing policies. Okay, thank you. A lot of times it just ended up changing some policies, such as, you know, when new staff came on, were they trained in physical activity and healthy eating? Were they made aware that this was a requirement as a staff member to lead physical activity 30 minutes each day? Did they know it was a requirement to serve healthy food, not to model healthy behavior, not to bring in soda or not to bring in candy? Did they know that? So that was a big part of it, and in changing their policy surrounding those issues. So next. So lastly, how did we do? Well, over since 2004, what we have done is we have reached a total of 117 out-of-school sites. They have all been trained in Catch. 66 sites received direct support, and what I mean by that is we worked one-on-one with them to provide support and technical assistance. We did 67 trainings, and 29 individuals were trained as Catch Kids Club trainers, which was very, very important because that helped with the sustainability. So now we have trainers all around New Hampshire that train other after-school programs in Catch Kids Club and environment and policy assessment, et cetera. So, and Karen mentioned that we do have also another one of our projects is healthy eating and active living, and Catch Kids Club is now this standard program to work with after-school sector with healthy eating and active living communities. And then you'll see the number of in-school and out-of-school staff trained. Yep. So as far as the environment and policy assessment, you'll see out of the 30 sites, so since the time that we started in 2009, 2010, started using environment policy assessment, we did those pre and post. 93% of those 30 sites made 4 more environment and policy changes. And the greatest improvements were including healthy eating and physical activity in their goals and mission statement, increasing time spent in physical activity, and reducing sedentary time, and also including healthy snack and beverage policies. And then lastly, to discourage educational screen time. And most project sites, and I would say that's upwards of 85 to 90% of sites now offer 25 to 30 minutes of physical activity 3 to 5 days a week, which was huge. Next. So looking down the road, and sustainability is very, very important to us. We're handing over the reins to a new entity, somewhat new entity in New Hampshire, Boost New Hampshire, and actually it's now called Better Out of School Time New Hampshire, and I probably should have changed that logo, but instead of using Boost, they're going to be called Better Out of School Time New Hampshire, and they are now in charge of training and providing technical assistance to out-of-school programs all over New Hampshire. The previous entity that we worked with, unfortunately, is no longer around, but they are the new out-of-school training and technical assistance entity in New Hampshire. And we're handing over the reins. We're bringing the Catch Kids Club project to them. And the interesting thing is that they already provide the technical assistance, they already provide training, so now it's embedded into a current system in New Hampshire. It's not just relying on us and relying on us having the funding to make this sustainable. And that is very, very, very important to us. They already do it, so we're handing over the reins to them. And the model has really shifted a little bit. I know I have to stop, but the model has shifted a little bit where what we're doing now is we're bringing program directors in and we're training them on training their staff, doing the environment policy assessment themselves, developing action plans, and planning for action. And we have this collaborative learning group of these program directors or organizational directors who work together throughout the whole school year. So we're not just teaching them how to fish by training them in Catch Kids Club, but we're showing them how to prepare the fish and cook the fish afterwards. And I think that's a very important point to make. We continue to emphasize environment and policy, and really now, at this point, the Catch Kids Club program, that great program with the curriculum and the equipment, that's just a tool within this much larger picture of environment and policy changes in after-school programs. That's the tool that they use to support their policy changes, to support their changes in their environment. So we're very thrilled, and we're very happy. And one thing to let you know, we do have some success stories. Oh. This is the wrong one. Hold on. That's yours. Yeah. This is Karen. This is mine. But this is posted on the APHA website, and it gives you 5 success stories of how people transform their after-school environment to improve healthy eating and physical activity for kids. So, thank you.
One thing I wanted to mention is from a foundation standpoint, a small foundation standpoint, CATCH training has been an incredibly effective buy for us. It's for a training costs about $12,000 to have them come up, train a whole staff, and train trainers. We've brought the program to the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Boston. It started in one of the most urban clubs in Roxbury, in the Blue Hill section of Roxbury, and watching the environment change in that place has been incredible. They wanted to do something. They didn't know how. We brought trainers up. Now they have a garden. The kids actually went 2 weeks ago, these are like 11-year-olds, to cook in a restaurant and host the board of the Boys and Girls Club for dinner downtown in Boston. It's just been amazing. So we then brought the trainers up to train all the staff in all the Greater Boston clubs, and we're just getting started with implementation of that. But that's an effective way for us to sort of work with people who know they want to do something and they're not quite sure how. So last but not least, Tori Rogers has made it. That's how women in Boston live on the edge. They drive down from Maine first thing in the morning. So you may as well all stand up now because Tori's going to make you do it. You've been sitting a lot. It's been a lot of talking heads. You may as well get up now because Tori's going to make you move around. You missed my amazing introduction of you.
I am so sorry.
It's okay. You're here now.
Yeah.
So I'm turning the podium over to Tori, and then when Tori's finished, we're just going to open this up to a conversation. You can stay as long as you want or as long as you don't want. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of PowerPoints, there's been a lot of talking heads at you, and I think it's time for us to have a conversation. But this part of the story is definitely worth hearing. So,
thank you, Karen. So feel free to all of you guys to stand as much as you want and to move. I won't lead you into any exercise. But I got to tell you a story. So I was at a Harvard Pilgrim Foundation function yesterday, so I feel that I saw Ed Cain. So I couldn't get up here. I thought, well, I'll get up at 4 a.m. that seems like a reasonable time. I'll get in my car at 5:15. I can make it, right?
Boom.
I don't know how people in Boston do this. So,
Well,
the person that got the most angry at me was a school bus. And they are beeping at me and beeping, and I'm like, listen, see my place? I'm from Maine. I do not know where the hell I am. So anyway, thank you for having me, you guys. This is great. I don't have a PowerPoint, and I thought I'd just spend about maybe 5 or 10 minutes and then just open it up for a great conversation and love to take your guys' questions from all of us, I think. So the Let's Go story is fascinating. Some of you in the room were around when the Let's Go story started. Steve Gortmaker and Jean and Dawn. And back in 2004, we decided to do this little project with 12 practices in Maine. And we decided to just figure out what healthcare providers could do around obesity. And we took this little message, 521, which was a message that Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield in Massachusetts was using at the time. 5 fruits and veggies a day, 2 hours or less of screen time, and 1 hour more of physical activity. And in Maine, we thought, well, let's add the zero message and decreasing sugary drinks. Steve had told us the research was there, and we'd use it for a couple years, and then we'd go on and do something else. So that was 2004, and we were working with these 12 practices all over the state of Maine, from the southern part to the northern part. And it's a pretty large state, pretty rural, but we do have some populated cities and towns. So all different kinds of practices. And what we found in the first year was, first of all, this was really hard work, and the clinicians didn't know what the hell to do. None of us were trained in nutrition, so none of us knew how to really talk to patients and families. And everybody found that this message of 5210 quickly shifted the conversation from a very charged conversation of weight to, like, healthy behavior stuff. And as a non-nutritionist, I could think about 5 or more fruits and veggies. I can deliver that message. 0 sugary drinks. I can deliver that message. Low-fat milk was a good thing at the time. I could deliver that message. And the physical activity and screen time we were already on. So we found this message just really resonated. And what clinicians said to me, it's a safety net, Tori. I can switch that conversation from weight, which is charged, and I'm really kind of scared about talking to adolescent girls and boys about weight, to this 5210 message, and it's really pretty cool. So in 2006, we had another neat opportunity, because the message was going kind of crazy, that we thought about taking it to schools. And at the time, I had a child in an elementary and kindergarten, so K and third grade, I guess the kids were. And I said, well, you know, I'm a quality improvement person. Let's just try it, like, in one school. So I took it to my kid's school, which then I found out was a school district, and then all the towns worked together. So 9 schools did this little pilot project. We got some funding from the Maine Center for Public Health to figure out if 5210 could work in a school setting. And the really cool thing was, in 2006, schools were mandated to have a wellness policy. So people in the school were like, oh, okay, we'll talk to you now. I'm like, okay. So we found out that the message resonated. It was a positive message. And again, it sort of took off on its own. So the message was sort of going crazy. And then in 2006, somewhere around that period of time, the founding partners of Let's Go, which were local businesses and healthcare folks in the greater Portland area, came together and decided to commit a large sum of money to figure out what to do in greater Portland. And I had the amazing benefit of getting involved with this group of founding partners. There was for-profit folks like TD Bank and Hannaford Brothers, a grocery store, Unum, the disability company, Anthem, the insurer, Maine Medical Center, where I work, Maine Health, and our parent company, and United Way of Greater Portland. And those 7 organizations came together and said, let's do something, which is a remarkable story in itself. And the leaders said, we don't really know what the hell to do, so let's just get some people in the room. And people came there not with preconceived notions of what should happen. It was not a randomized control study, and my researchers in the audience will say that's crazy, but we just said, let's just play in the sandbox and sort of figure out what people need. And then we spent about a year figuring it out, we decided it was going to be a multi-setting. We were going to work in lots of different settings and multi-level. We weren't just going to work with kids. We'd work with families. And we'd work also with organizations like schools and communities, and then ultimately maybe we'd work even with the state government. So as we're sorting this all around, my phone rings in my office, and I'm never sitting at my desk. And I pick it up, and this woman goes, "Hi, I'm Karen Boetze." And I said, "Oh, hi." And she goes, "I'm from Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Foundation. I heard you're doing some cool stuff. We want to fund you." Okay. So the really cool thing is Karen and I had a number of conversations about it. And then in 2007, Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Foundation generously funded us, and they're our biggest funder of our work to date. It is really remarkable what the foundation has put together. And it's not just the money. It's these guys giving us critical input from time to time. So that's sort of how it all happened. And what we do at Let's Go, as many of you probably have already heard, and sorry I missed your guys' presentations, we focus on environmental and policy change. We don't do health fairs and safety fairs and those kind of one-offs. We really look at changing the environments, whether it's an early child care site or a school site or a doctor's office or an after-school site. And we tie it all together in our communities with a 5210 message, very positive. So child obesity is sort of the call to action, and then we forget about it and really just talk about health, which was really critically important for us because we did not want to be seen as sort of the fat kids club. It was really important for us that it was about health. So from 2006 to 2011, we did a demonstration project in Greater Portland, 12 communities, about a population of about 200,000. Pretty not ethnically diverse. It's Maine. It's a pretty white population. But we did have pockets of immigrants and refugees, which were really exciting work. And what we did in that time, we did a very rigorous evaluation, just published the data from that. And we showed that by using a consistent message, focusing on the positive message, focusing on environmental and policy change, and we had some media campaign that went around it, we could increase awareness, increase knowledge, increase behavior change, and it appears that we're leveling off the obesity prevalence. We have another data point to be collecting on that this fall. And so it was, again, I thought I could keep going back to my day job, because again, in 2004, I had this little thing I was going to do and then go back to my day job as a pediatrician. But in 2011, when this initial demonstration project ended, it was so positive. And Maine's a pretty small state. You either know everybody or somehow are related to everybody. It's large but small because everybody knows everybody. About a population of about 1.2 million. And it started to go viral through our local health coalitions called Healthy Maine Partnerships and through the local hospital systems. And so now we are a statewide program. We work in all the 16 counties. This past year, we worked with over 1,000 sites between childcare and after school, doctor's offices, school nutrition, looking at M. Cook, early childhood, which is great. That's our biggest one. And M is our early childhood expert. And we've shown some significant changes in the environments and the policies, which we think are really important for sustainability. And behavior change is continuing to change. So that's our story in a nutshell. I could go on more, but I think it might be more exciting to kind of hear from you guys, because I figure many of you guys are in the audience are probably experts in this too, so happy to open it up for questions now.